Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 29, 2020. My new article on San Diego Jewish World: The Jewish Privilege Trends Major Takeaway. The maelstrom of a global pandemic has recently kept worldwide anti-Semitism relatively quiet, but it does not mean that Jew haters are resting. On Twitter, the anti-Semitic hashtag JewishPrivilege, which was originally used to accuse Jews of racism and control over other minorities, rapidly became a top trending hashtag. In an attempt to push back against the hashtag's anti-Semitic sentiment, Jewish celebrities posted personal stories of discrimination, bigotry and persecution suffered directly by them or their families throughout generations. But, as expected, it failed to ease the animosity. In another instance of special treatment of Jews, Twitter accounts of users displaying a Star of David became locked by the social media platform, which deemed the Jewish symbol as hateful imagery. Surprisingly, this is all happening at a time when social media giants face boycotts from international corporations, which are pulling multi-million-dollar advertising budgets from what they call a permissive hate speech culture by those platforms. Apparently, anti-Semitism is a more powerful exception to the rules against online hate speech than both advertising dollars and boycott threats, since it is still widely tolerated and the responsible regulators look the other way. Hatred of Jews, however, does not depend on our actions. It is a sensation embedded in nature that can emerge in people instantaneously. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains that anti-Semitism first surfaced together with the emergence of the Jewish people around 4,000 years ago in ancient Babylon. While Babylon was experiencing a crisis of social division with conflicts and hatred tearing up society, Abraham, a Babylonian priest who discovered the path to unity above the growing divisions, began openly teaching his method to anyone who wanted to learn. Those who felt that social discord was the burning issue of the time flocked to study with him. He guided them to the discovery of the single uniting force necessary to rise above divisiveness. The group he led became known as the People of Israel, meaning straight to God, Yasharel in Hebrew, that is, straight to the single force of love and bestowal that exists in reality. Later, the group also became known as Jews, which derived from the Hebrew word Yehud, meaning unity. Since the Jewish people were the first to attain unity above division, they received the mandate to act as a light unto the nations. This meant that their role was first to connect, and then, to spread the light that emanated from their connection like rippling waves to the rest of humanity. Why is this role so important today? It is because in today's world the overblown human ego, social division, conflicts and hatred are all rising exponentially, causing myriad problems and crises, and thus there is a renewed urgency and necessity for the Jewish people to carry out their role. The more people suffer, the more they subconsciously blame the Jews for holding the keys to fix the problems, but failing to do so. This scenario is the origin of Jew hatred. The sensation that the Jews have a special calling to unite in order to pass unity to the world, but don't. If we Jews make no effort to connect, we block the positive unifying force from reaching humanity, and hatred pressures us to perform what is expected of us. Humanity's positive future depends solely on us. If we have a privilege, it is in our role to deliver human society the abundance and fulfillment that comes from uniting as one man with one heart. As is written by the most renowned Kabbalist of our generation, Rav Yehuda Ashlag, Baal HaSulam, it is the wisdom of faith, justice and peace which most nations learn from us, and this wisdom is ascribed to us, alone. When we as Jews unite, even slightly, we will act as a conduit for the force of unity to spread throughout human consciousness. As soon as we realize our unique role in the world, we will spare ourselves and all humanity much suffering, since only the power of unification can enable human society to rise above its narrow egoistic nature, and to discover the vast space of happiness that stems from unity. The Times of Israel published my new article "Don't Overlook the Message of the Ninth of Av." This Wednesday, July 29th, will be the ninth of the Hebrew month of Av. On that day, both temples were ruined and the Jews were exiled from their land. On the first exile, they were deported to Babylon, from which they returned after 70 years with the blessing of the Persian king, Cyrus the Great, and a letter granting them imperial support in resettling the land and rebuilding the temple. The period of the second temple is more complicated than the first. In the midst of it, Jews began to fight among themselves as Hellenized Jews tried to root out traditional Judaism and install the Greek culture and mythology, and the Maccabees fought against them, striving to oust Hellenism and restore authenticity to Judaism. In that period, Jews lost control over the temple but regained it after the Maccabees won the war. But finally, the internal battles and hatred among belligerent Jewish factions destroyed the country, ravaged Jerusalem, and demolished the temple. Subsequently, the Jews were exiled for 2,000 years. Although historians attribute both exiles to external conquerors, ancient Jewish texts attribute very little influence to external factors, if any. Instead, they pin the troubles of the Jewish people on their own disunity. As though we've never learned. The Jewish people gained their nationhood when they united as one man with one heart at the foot of Mount Sinai. According to Jewish ancient writings, the Hebrews who came out of Egypt were told that if they united, they would be declared a nation. If they did not, the mountain would cover them like a vault and would become their tombstone. The Jews, according to the sources, united and became the Jewish nation, or Israelites. But at that time, they were also tasked with being a light unto nations, namely to set an example of unity to the rest of the nations. That demand that Jews would be role models of unity has since become the kernel of all Jewish hatred, both emanating from other nations, as well as from Jews who resented the idea of unity and wanted to pursue their individualistic, later to become Hellenistic, agendas. 2,000 years ago, the hatred within the Jewish people became so fierce that they locked themselves inside their capital, Jerusalem, with the Roman legion camped outside the walls, slaughtered one another, burned each other's food reservoirs, and made General Titus work much easier when he finally decided to conquer the city and destroy the temple. The hatred of the Jews for one another was so evident and abominable that it denied the triumphant Titus the thrill of victory. When Queen Helena offered him a victory wreath after he took Jerusalem, Titus declined, saying that there was no merit in vanquishing a people deserted by their own God. The day when the Romans marched into the temple and sealed the Jewish defeat was to become a day of mourning since then. But we should not mourn the destruction of the walls or the breaking of the altar. We should instead mourn the ruin of our unity, our brotherly love, the abandonment of our task to unite as one man with one heart and be a role model for the nations. When Hitler explained in Mein Kampf why he hates Jews, he expounded on his disgust with their dislike for one another. The Jew is only united when a common danger forces him to be, or a common booty entices him. If these two grounds are lacking, the qualities of the crassest egoism come into their own, he writes. Numerous other anti-Semites wrote and spoke similarly about the Jewish people. They would not dedicate such attention to Jewish hatred of each other if they did not expect Jews to feel otherwise toward their brethren. Today, nearly a century after the rise of the most diabolic, genocidal leader of the most advanced, modern, and civilized nation at the time, Jews have still learned nothing. Once again, division and internal hatred are rampant, both in Israel and outside of it. Jewish anti-Jewish groups are once again becoming increasingly raucous and yell out with righteous indignation that only their way is right, that Jews with other views are ignorant and inferior. They do not realize that their affirmation in the eyes of the nations, for which they so desperately yearn, depends not on their ideology, but on their unity precisely with those brethren they hate. From the perspective of the world, nothing has changed. We are still tasked with being a light unto nations by setting an example of unity, and we are still hated for showing the opposite. Vasily Shulgin, a senior member of the Russian parliament before the 1917 revolution and an avid self-proclaimed anti-Semite, wrote in his book What We Don't Like About Them, Jews in the 20th century have become very smart, effective, and vigorous at exploiting other people's ideas. However, he protests, this is not an occupation for teachers and prophets, not the role of guides of the blind, not the role of carriers of the lame. Deep inside, every Jew feels indebted to the world. Deep inside, we feel the call of our vocation. But we will never live up to our task through hating one another. We will do so only if we show the world that above our fierce disagreements, we love each other like family. Although we cannot agree on anything, we form a union that is stronger than any dispute. The divisions between us are the vehicle through which we can show the world what unity means, but only if we rise to the challenge and unite above them. If we do so, the world will see that unity is possible however deep the chasm between people and nations. If we keep avoiding unity, the world will keep blaming us for spreading division in the world and will make us pay for its suffering. Michael Leitman, on Quora, how will coronavirus change consumer behavior forever? The coronavirus put spokes in the wheels of the egoistic competitive paradigm that we had accepted as the norm until recently. It is because we have reached a point in human development where we need to start growing beyond our egoistic human nature, the inclination to personally benefit at the expense of others. In other words, our present era is characterized by nature pressing upon us to enter into balance with its interconnected and interdependent form, and thus, it is no longer tolerant of our abuse. As such, businesses involving the exploitation of people and nature will gradually disappear. The days of opening any business we want, with profit motives at the forefront, and social and ecological considerations in the background, if at all, are over. We thus have a major undertaking ahead of us. It requires none less than to balance with nature, that is, to adjust our attitudes to each other in adaptation with the integral relationships among everything existing in nature. As nature functions according to laws of altruism and interdependence, so too we need to upgrade the quality of our relationships, from egoistic to altruistic, divisive to well-connected, in order to experience healthy, safe and happy lives, balanced with nature. We have interesting times ahead of us. I think that when we eventually become freed from the pandemic's conditions, we will more clearly feel how there is no return to the steroid-pumped capitalistic framework we were in before the coronavirus entered our lives. At that stage, I also see us starting to acknowledge the extent to which we have changed. Where until recently, people respected the idea of increasing profit margins, paying more attention to the digits in each one's respective bank accounts than to other people's well-being, I think more and more people will despise such a tendency. We will enter into a difficult and confusing period. There will be a lot of effort put into trying to revive the pre-coronavirus world together with an increased distaste with that world. Businesses and consumer habits will become more essentials focused, and people will hold to more normal universal values. As we head into the future, people wanting to run businesses will need to think very hard about whether and how their business will provide people with something they really cannot do without. Nature itself will no longer let us splurge in surplus leisure. High unemployment will sweep through societies and the unemployed will be unable to find work that deals with non-essential goods and services. Governments will be faced with a major problem in terms of what to do with their vast unemployed populations. I have proposed a model, which recommends paying these people a stipend that covers their needs in exchange for engaging in a new form of education that teaches how to live harmoniously in today's interdependent reality, the kind of education absent from the schooling system that raised us. The rest of the population will be engaged in needed and vital work for humanity, and not in work for the sake of profits, riches and individualistic success at the expense of others. I sincerely hope that we arrive at such a setup sooner rather than later, because we will reach it one way or another. While we perceive ourselves as separate from nature, able to seemingly think and act freely, we simply fail to see that we are nature's parts, and nature is guiding us, to match its laws with or without our awareness. We have reached a stage of development where we experience nature's disagreement with our excessive exploitation of its resources and of each other, in the form of the coronavirus. And I see this pandemic as our first major stage of purification. Kabbalah published my new article, The Meaning of Tisha B'Av, Kabbalah. Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, is a very significant state in human development. Tisha B'Av serves as a memorial of the destruction of the Holy Temple. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, this ruin represents our loss of awareness of our unification as a single soul, which the Holy Temple represents. It is a state that Kabbalah also calls the breaking or shattering of the vessels. The immense importance of the breaking of the vessels is that there can be no complete correction and unification without having undergone corruption and shattering. Tisha B'Av thus represents two polar opposite states, sorrow and crying from the forecast of the impending breakage, with the understanding that we need to do everything in our power to withstand it, that is, to hold on to our unification against the increasing pressure to shatter our unification to pieces. Tremendous joy in the conditions that the breakage brings us, that our loss of unification is a chance at attaining a greater and more complete form of unification. Therefore, the sorrow about the past ruins needs to be balanced with the joy in the chance that these ruins bring, to rise to a higher and more complete form of connection. Tisha B'Av is thus not merely an annual fast day in the Jewish calendar, where a number of disasters throughout history are remembered and mourned. It is rather a state that can surface at any moment when we acknowledge our failure to actively participate in our current process of correction, the correction of those relationships that once shattered, which is considered as the construction of a new holy temple. How does this work? The 16th century, which was the period of the great Kabbalist Isaac Luria, the Ari, designated the time when the gates to the knowledge of the process of correction opened up to humanity. Until then, those gates were locked shut, as Kabbalists, who held the method of correction, knew very well that the time was still unripe. Since the 16th century onward, and much more so in our times, the knowledge and ability to participate actively in the process of correction has become increasingly available, the more that the authentic wisdom of Kabbalah has spread. Therefore, we need not dwell in sadness about holy temples that became ruined thousands of years ago. Instead, our sorrow should be directed at our negligence to willingly participate in the process of correction that is present at every moment. In other words, each moment we fail to add our participation to the process of correction, that is, aiming to connect positively to each other in order to bring unity to the world, and reunite on a higher level than we had in the past. Or in other words, each moment we fail to add another brick to the construction of the new holy temple, then it is our unawareness, disregard and lack of concern about ours and humanity's positive future, which we should be sorry about. We cannot truly understand what happened 2,000 years ago. Our desires are much bigger today, and our era is characterized by the impending construction of the new holy temple, that is, a state of unity above all divisions that all humanity needs to reach. Therefore, crying about what happened in the past makes us seem like righteous individuals who look back at those meager and unfortunate people back then, an approach that fails to account for the necessity of that ruin in order for a specific order to develop. Since the 16th century, the Ari's time, the ability to participate in the process of correction has opened up to humanity, and the meaning of Tisha B'Av can be understood according to this process. The ruin of the temples is the shattering of human relations, the division spreading worldwide among humanity, a broken state that we have been given the ability to fix. We thus should not relate to Tisha B'Av as history, but as a situation that we can encounter on a moment-by-moment basis as we head forth to correct our broken relations and reach a much higher and more complete unification than we have ever experienced before. Thrive Global published my new article, The True Recovery Treatment for an Aching Europe. The need to implement these laws of mutuality and integration is now more evident in the coronavirus era than ever before. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron leave after their joint video press conference at the end of the European summit at the EU headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, July 21, 2020. John Dyes, pool via Reuters. Europe's nerves have not been calmed by the pompous announcement of an unprecedented stimulus fund to rebuild the continent's economies severely damaged by the coronavirus pandemic. The sharp recurrence of cases in countries such as Spain, France, and Germany, which were thought to have COVID-19 somehow under control, has proven that the virus and its devastating effects are not vanishing anytime soon. The problem will not be remedied through the unity of Europe's pocketbooks but through the unity of people's hearts. The $2 trillion infusion into the European economic system was agreed upon by the 27 leaders of the Union as grants and loans to the continent's hardest hit member nations. The massive deal, still waiting to be ratified by the EU Parliament, has been promoted as the birth of a new Europe. But the fund's conditions and disbursement plan have raised eyebrows among its opponents within a bloc who consider the medicine worse than the sickness. Human society has emerged as an integral global system binding together nations, economies, and cultures, and thus, the problems that Europe and the world experience have the same common root, narrow and cruel egoism. Although the recovery package may appear to be an important response to Europe's most pressing needs, the deal in the best of cases can only provide a cosmetic solution. Why is it so? It is because, as expressed decades ago when the Bloc of Nations was created, a match among such partners could not give birth to any good result. As it is written, the dispersion of the wicked is good for them and good for the world. Miss Snar, Sanhedrin 71b, by wicked, our sages meant those controlled by their divisive egoistic nature of self-benefit at the expense of others. In other words, the European Union is only a camouflaging cover for a false unity, and it will continue to be so until people's selfish nature is changed. European imbalances and the bloc's internal egoistic disputes will not allow members to connect wholeheartedly. They are dry-hearted toward each other. Since the EU's foundation, its members have not truly shown care for each other's prosperity and stability, nor have they exerted efforts to raise future generations to become more responsible and caring for each other than our current one. Thus, as long as the person's egoistic nature remains unchanged, there can be no authentic change in society either. Nonetheless, the coronavirus pandemic constantly reminds us that we have no option but to move in a different direction, toward a more genuine unity among people than ever before. Human society has emerged as an integral global system binding together nations, economies, and cultures, and thus, the problems that Europe and the world experience have the same common root, narrow and cruel egoism. The remedy for these problems can be found in an educational method specifically devised to transcend the problem of this underlying egoism. Therefore, the crisis can only be solved with a comprehensive approach that includes human connection as the pivotal factor for enabling a long-lasting solution to the problem. Without human relations deeply rooted in integration and true concern for the other, all bombastic revamps are destined to fail. Had the EU plan included a main clause calling for education, or a paragraph demanding the spread of new human relations across the continent, or even an appendix declaring an intention to bring citizens closer together, one could still nod and agree that there is a chance that something could work out. But there is no such basis in the agreement, no inclination toward connection, and no motion to abolish the ego. Thus, we can expect nothing good to come out of mere technical actions, from a signature on a document. Even if the EU had a billion more euros to invest, the decision still would not have yielded positive results. On the contrary, it would have led them to even stronger resistance and clashes, to wars and harsh struggles, and to outbreaks of new plagues. Why is it so? It is because the stimulus plan fails to take society's balance with the laws of nature into account, laws that operate as an integral system where all parts, regardless of their dimension and status, fulfill a necessary role and complement each other in the system's proper functioning. The need to implement these laws of mutuality and integration is now more evident in the coronavirus era than ever before. Now, nature necessitates that we realize the bankruptcy of our past egoistic systems in society, and rise to a new unified consciousness. Even a simple thought in the direction of true unification would be a big step, not only toward the birth of a new Europe, but toward the birth of a new world. Published on July 27, 2020. New Life 1255. The Evolution of Employment, Part 2.
Shalom lachem, toda shetem mitzarfim elenu, anachnu
kan. Hello to all of you, thank you for joining us in our new live series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello. Hello everyone. Hello Nitza Mazoz. This is show number 1255 and we will talk about the evolution of the business world with Dr. Michael Lightman. We were working people, our forefathers, our rather parents and our grandparents were also people who had to work, and we will see what's happening now in the age of the coronavirus, in the renewing business world. Let's see what's going to happen. Nitza. Okay, so we see that the world of employment is, the business world is also undergoing evolution. So without connection even to the coronavirus, we see that many professions, many jobs, well, they become extinct over time, and replacing them are different jobs and occupations, which were difficult for us to even imagine. And I remember as a child, the ice seller that used to pass around the street with a cart ringing a bell, and anyone who needed ice just went down and bought ice. Of course, this disappeared from our world, and we have other such professions which are gone and they're extinct, and we have different ones to replace them. So we feel that this is a very special time as well, where the global processes of change seriously affect the business world. We see that researchers from the Oxford University, they analyze data from the United States, and they say that in a decade or two, 50% of professions that we know today will disappear entirely, and instead of them, other things will come. What they noted, however, and emphasized, is that roles that require human interaction and such abilities, related abilities, warmth, the ability to contain others and relate to them, those are things that won't be replaced. These are things that will have to continue and develop. So we want to understand where the business world is headed. What's going to be the main thing that we should invest in to learn, to develop in? So how do you see these things, Dr. Lightman? I see that it is indeed so, but just much faster, with greater pace, and it's much more clear that this will happen. We are at a time where many businesses are vanishing off the face of the earth. Really, there's no essential need for them. We sustain them with force, otherwise they would disappear already and by force. And these businesses, if you can call them that, which talk about relations between people to build up a new person, closeness between people, these businesses truly flourish and succeed. Much more so than today, we will have organizations, movements, groups, businesses, which will take care of human relations. So, in parallel with this channel, which will develop, I suppose, because we see that in business world, people used to work the land more, they worked with animals in the field, agriculture. Gradually it became bigger machines, and from there computers, and it's, you can assume that in the future it will be all about AI and robotics. So in parallel with this whole field that will, I suppose, continue developing, you say that another branch, so to speak, is going to build, to be built and established, which will engage in human relations, human interaction. Dr. Lightman, connections. Nitsa, connections. Right, so this is still early days, so what is this whole... Dr. Lightman, we never talked about connections between people, really. The connections we have here is, well, our connections to our relatives, let's say our family, natural connections, born of natural attraction, let's say, between a man and a woman, the love of a woman to her child, and so on. The draw of nature, as a person feels it, things he sees as good and nice, wholesome. But here we have to build new relationships between all people and between people to all forms of life and all forms of life, which are not dependent on the goodwill that a person has by nature towards those things, like the man and his woman, like the women and their babies. Rather, we need to build relationships between people who have no natural attraction to each other, where we're not pushed to connect, but first we have to correct ourselves to a point where we feel the necessity to connect, as we say, above reason, above our emotions, above our intellect, because we see that this is necessary and good. Dr. Nitsa, so if I understand correctly, what you're saying here is that the kind of service I had to give people before was more physical, giving something to them, etc. Now there's this new subtlety here in this service I'll need to learn to give, right? You call it connections. Dr. Lightman, yes, it's inner work, let's call it. Nitsa, so it's not a product that I have to give to someone, right? Dr. Lightman, no, let's say there is a group of people that you hate, and you go to them and you start folding, bending yourself, not them, but you, yourself, in order to treat them well, to the point where you actually want to have love for them. Owen, why? Dr. Lightman, because we want to change our nature from good to, from evil to good. Owen, what's the connection? Dr. Lightman, what do you mean? What's the connection? There needs to be a connection between all people. And with all people, I have this natural attitude. Anyone who's not like me, who's not me, I hate. I drive away. And we need to come closer. We need to see in each one that he's close to me, similar to me. Oh, and despite the fact that I don't feel, to begin with, that he's like me or close, he's completely different. Dr. Lightman, of course. Oh, and so that's the field of work you called making connections, to form connections between people who are different. Dr. Lightman, yes. Oh, and so it's interesting that you chose this as the opening point for discussing the business world. So what are these more advanced professions, these more subtle professions going to be in tomorrow, let's say? Dr. Lightman, We have to be better bonded together, closer together, otherwise we won't be able to establish systems of supply and etc., production. We won't be able to establish them properly because these systems will depend on what we just talked about, on how I feel everyone to be close to me, connected to me, beloved. And this is the only reason why I make a business with them. Oh, when I was a child, I think the first computer was developed. It was huge. It was like the size of a room. Later, computers became so small, and today you have on your wristwatch, right? You have a computer there. So what's will be the new technology in creating connections between people who are different? What technology will you use? What means? Dr. Reichman, there are no means or tools here. It's all within us, in our minds and hearts. You don't have any adapters, anything like that. We will have to establish such relationships between us. Oh, and naturally, things that are different are close, are far from each other. Dr. Lightman, and it's especially those people who are far from me, different from me, that I want to build good relationship, close relationships with. Oh, and why? Dr. Lightman, because by that I gain the most. It's like the relationships of plus and minus. I gained the best results that way. Owen, so I think in the world today, similarity and difference between peoples brought us to conflicts, wars. Dr. Lightman, this is because we don't know how to connect properly about the difference. Dr. Owen, and this is going to be the main profession in the future? Why? Dr. Lightman, yes, I'm saying that besides for that, we have nothing else to do. If we connect together between people who are far from each other, hated by each other, but in that we build our society in a good, pleasant way. What can you do otherwise? Nita. So you're describing a fascinating process of a transition between physical services we use to give each other to services which are more inner, more personal. Dr. Lightman, yes, exactly. Nita, and this is interesting because in the study I mentioned before, well, it says that all the administrative roles, all those physical roles, that you can replace with robots and AI and advanced technology. However, those more mental, let's call them services, the inner services, soul service, let's say, that people need, nobody will be able to give them. Now, let's say a person who's giving such service, helping me create such a connection, what will it give me as a person? How will I feel? Dr. Lightman, first of all, we will have to develop new programs, but actually very good ones. I mean, the formula is very simple. You know, this and that and plus and minus equals maximum. You know, that's how it is in mathematics. And that's very simple then. And this maximum determines what will happen. It's not that I do this for him, he does that for me, and we have this struggle between us in a way, but ultimately we get this formula. Through the formula we get to the optimal results. Nita, okay, so I don't follow. What does the formula say exactly? Dr. Lightman, the formula says that in any interaction we have between us as people, we're like two machines, let's say, and between businesses, and between all the thousands and billions of people in their various interactions, all we want to achieve is that all our actions will give the maximum benefits to everyone. Everyone. And then we have a simple way to conduct ourselves, a simple form, optimal. Nita, okay, so I want to ask, because the things you said are creating such a sense of order here, that I want to express it in a way. Up to now, many of the services, the products that we bought, that we acquired, were meant to supply, to fulfill some inner need in us. And this includes nearly everything. I would say that this whole culture of consumerism that we develop, the need to buy something that will perhaps give me some status symbols, etc., all these things that we added to ourselves in a physical sense, their purpose was ultimately to fulfill an inner need. So you say, now we clear away all these things, and you are going to supply each other with an inner thing, that inner fulfillment that you were searching for the whole time. Is it correct to look at it that way? Dr. Lightman, yes? Nita, what is the person looking for, actually? Dr. Lightman, he's looking for the maximum benefit. And he sees here that his maximal benefit depends on everyone. And that's what we see. But because it's good for everyone, and so we receive this formula, this good, nice formula, every computer knows how to run that. And we solve such problems in mathematics as well. Nita, is it optimization of a sort? Is that what it's about? To check the optimal state, where each one receives exactly what they need. And it doesn't mean that each one needs the same thing. Perhaps they need slightly different things. Dr. Leitner. Yes, every person needs just one thing, Nita, and that is, Dr. Lightman, to fulfill the needs of others. Nita, please repeat that, that's interesting. Again, he needs to do what? Dr. Lightman, to fulfill others. Not himself, yes, but others. And it's certain that by that we reach the optimal state, best optimization. Nita, okay, so coming back to my profession, to my job, let's say, or in the business world, let's say I open some course where I want to teach this new profession, where I teach people how to create connections. What do I need to do? Dr. Reitman, you have to explain, to teach them a new form of mathematics, which works not according to plus and minus and how they complement each other or conflict. Rather, there is a new formula here, where the one and the other, the minus and the plus, both, they both work to fulfill each other's needs, to fulfill the needs of others, and then, despite them being a plus and a minus, they will become a plus and a plus. So it sounds that what you are describing here will require of me new skills, new abilities, so as to become a good business person. Dr. Lightman, yes. Nita, what are the new abilities and skills I'll have to acquire? Dr. Lightman, to perform such exercises where the good of others becomes your motivation, your own good. Nita, so over this course I'm going to practice my ability to feel others and their needs, Dr. Lightman, to integrate in them, to clothe in them, to enter into them, and in such a way to solve all the problems. Oh, and why? Why does it work this way? Dr. Lightman, it's the same way a mother acts with her child. Oh, and why is this the new mathematics? Dr. Lightman, it works not according to my ego, and also not according to the other's ego. That's another question here, which we perhaps have to scrutinize. Rather, it works according to the integral world, where we have to adapt ourselves to nature, which is round, integral. And then it's certain that we won't fail, because ultimately what descends down upon us in our businesses, what happens is that we are operated by nature. Oh, and so the skills, new business skills in the world of tomorrow will be more adapted to the integral world. Dr. Lightman, yes, of course. And this is revealed more and more, because what we built And what we continue to build, it's all according to the egoistic nature, which is now coming to a close. Oh, and so what is the basic skill required for the business world of tomorrow? Dr. Lightman, to work for others, for the benefit of others. But also, it's not exactly accurate. Our words, our vocabulary isn't exactly appropriate. It's not that I work for the sake of others. I work for the sake of the integrality of human society as a whole. Why is this worthwhile for me, personally? Not like one, because then you integrate in this integrality and you feel the general force operating within it, which is the general force of nature. And then it's certain that you feel the perfection and eternality of nature. And that is the highest state that can be attained. Oh, and we talked about the development of AI, which will turn many of today's professions, it will make them redundant because the robot knows how to do it better than me, to think even better than me. So what roles would you say, what professions will never be replaced by computers and robotics? What can never be replaced? Is there such a human ability? Dr. Lightman, yes, of course. We built our science, our industry, according to our nature. Dr. Lightman, meaning? Dr. Lightman, according to egoistic nature, plus and minus. You as an accountant know this well. That's one thing. The other thing is that we here need to understand that we are now operating according to the principle of a circle, not a line. Of a circle. Oh, and what does this principle mean? Dr. Wagman, it's a new attitude to the environment, a new attitude to the world. The world operates according to that, and only according to it is that's how we will work. Oh, and so what you talked about before, connections, the more conflict you have, the more differences you have, we can make more subtle connections. So the differences between people who are very opposite to each other, the art of creating connection between them brings them to much higher force, the integral force of nature, which is greater than this conflict or that conflict. Dr. Lightman, yes, it's the general force. It's an evolution. It's a revolution in our perception of reality. And then we begin to see reality in a different way, not limited to this world. Rather, reality extends and expands until it has no limits. And together with that, we begin to live within our consciousness, our thoughts, our desires, and not in this physical world that is vanishing from our senses with the old worlds, all its businesses and professions, everything you had. Oh, and so my next question is really about businesses. So according to the principle of the circle, which businesses will flourish in today's world as you see it? Dr. Lightman, other than what is crucial for people, as for now we are still in the corporeal sense, in bodies, embodied, we will need, other than to just sustain our donkeys, we call it the body, so that it allows us to live, to exist within our soul, as we call it, within our connections with others. Other than that, we need nothing. Meaning, all the businesses that work to connect people together, to connect, really, not to connect at the soccer court or something like that, or in clubs. Oh, and so how to connect, Dr. Lightman? To connect in such a way where I feel that I connect to another And in the connection between us, we discover new degrees of reality. In reality. Owen, so what business would you establish? Dr. Lyman. Only systems where you study connection. We don't need anything else. We need clothing, we need food, so long as we exist physically. But soon we will see that all of this is also vanishing. Nita, so this need for connection between people, give us an overview. What happens to people who truly feel that they receive these services that you describe, these connections? Suddenly they live within the connection. What happens to them in terms of what they feel? Dr. Lightman, they feel themselves to be less and less tied to the earthly world, corporeal world. So the physical, the things that had to be very found before, very essential, those needs reduce and diminish, and they receive fulfillment, this happiness as you describe it, internally, where it doesn't matter how much we cried before. Dr. Lightman, exactly, and only they will understand it. Nita, okay, so what does such a person acquire? Dr. Lightman, he acquires an inner connection by which the point of his soul expands, and he feels into reality, which is called the upper world. Dr. Owen, so what role will be the most sought after in the world tomorrow? Dr. Lightman, a guide that knows how to connect people. Owen, to connect people? Dr. Lightman, not just connection, but spiritual connection, which brings them to open up the new world in the proper connection between them. Owen, so now this was more accurate. Spiritual connections between people. The world spiritual can throw each one to whatever fantasy. So what are spiritual connections which are that's the most essential profession for tomorrow, as you say, Dr. Lightman? Spiritual means it's very simple. It means that I don't feel any selfish benefit from it. Oh, and so why do you do it? Dr. Lightman, to bring myself and others, everyone, to a connection above our nature. Oh, and we talked about the evolution of the business world from the ice sellers, as Nitsa described. What will be the role of the profession of tomorrow? Define it. Dr. Lightman, it'll be a connection between us where we feel so connected together that the self of each one disappears and we integrate, as we call it, as one man in one heart. Owen, and what will you feel? What will a person feel? Dr. Lightman, let's go there and feel it. Something, can you describe? Dr. Lightman, you can't describe a feeling, you can't explain a feeling, but it's a good thing. It's a world without corporeal limitations, without the earth and the universe. It's a completely new world. Rav Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Nita. Thank you all for being with us. New life, a new world. All the best. Goodbye.
Michael Lateman, on Quora, Israel had a coronavirus record over the July 4th weekend, with cases spiking by 13%. Why do you think that is? Now we are heading toward the end of July 2020, and the coronavirus cases have spiked nearly 92% more over the course of the month, from 28.4K cases on July 5th to 54.4K cases on July 23rd. Why? As I have written and spoken about extensively since the coronavirus became a global pandemic, COVID-19 is not merely a health and economic issue, but a nature-sent phenomenon that has come to reprogram humanity, to make us all more aware of our interdependence and interconnectedness, and to give us conditions by which we become forced to exercise our mutual dependence on each other. Also, before the coronavirus struck the world, I extensively wrote and spoke about the people of Israel having a special role in our world, to pioneer humanity's transformation to a positive connection above its increasing divisiveness. The more divided society becomes, the more there is a need for the unity that the people of Israel have a method to realize. Therefore, if we, the people of Israel, make strides to positively connect in order to be a unifying example for humanity, we will then experience a positive reaction from nature and other nations. If we fail to move in a unifying direction, then our negligence and disunity will ripple throughout humanity in the many forms of social division pitting people in the world against each other, and we will experience its negative backlash. Instead of becoming a unifying example capable of leading the world to a more harmonious state, we have become the opposite, an example of social discord, like a tail trailing behind humanity, dragging along and slowing down humanity's progress to a more positively connected state. This is the situation we're currently in. Thus, it comes as no surprise to me that we have encountered a major rise in coronavirus cases this month. And it has nothing to do with whether or not we observe the health department's guidelines. Until we reach an understanding of our role, that we exist not for ourselves but for humanity, and feel on our flesh that we need to contribute an example of unification above division to humanity, then we can expect more and more malfunctions that work against us. The calculation with regard to the people of Israel is always in relation to humanity's unity or disunity. If we act to increase unity among ourselves and humanity, then we will experience positive feedback together with a force of connection that increases humanity's happiness, safety and health to humanity. And the more human society needs unity, that is, the more it experiences the negative effects of its divisiveness, then the more we will become pressed to respond according to our fateful role. My new article on Algemania does Kabbalah suggest a new approach to anti-Semitism? The maelstrom of a global pandemic has not kept anti-Semites and Jew haters quiet. On Twitter, the anti-Semitic hashtag #JewishPrivilege, which was originally used to accuse Jews of racism and control over other minorities, rapidly became a top trending hashtag. In an attempt to push back against the hashtag's anti-Semitic sentiment, Jewish celebrities posted personal stories of discrimination, bigotry, and persecution suffered directly by them or their families throughout generations. But, as expected, it failed to ease the animosity. In another instance of special treatment of Jews, Twitter accounts of users displaying a Star of David were locked by the social media platform, which deemed the Jewish symbol as hateful imagery. Twitter later said this was done by accident. Surprisingly, this is all happening at a time when some social media giants face boycotts from international corporations, which are pulling multi-million dollar advertising budgets from what they call a permissive hate speech culture on those platforms. Apparently, anti-Semitism is a more powerful exception to the rules against online hate speech than both advertising dollars and boycott threats, since it is still widely tolerated, and the responsible regulators look the other way. Hatred of Jews, however, does not depend on our actions. It is a sensation embedded in nature. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains that anti-Semitism first surfaced together with the emergence of the Jewish people around 4,000 years ago in ancient Babylon. While Babylon was experiencing a crisis of social division, with conflicts and hatred tearing up society, Abraham, a Babylonian priest who discovered the path to unity above the growing divisions, began openly teaching his method to anyone who wanted to learn. Those who felt that social discord was the burning issue of the time flocked to study with him. He guided them to the discovery of the single uniting force necessary to rise above divisiveness. The group he led became known as the People of Israel, meaning straight to God, Yasharel in Hebrew, that is, straight to the single force of love and bestowal that exists in reality. Later, the group also became known as Jews, which derived from the Hebrew word Yehud, meaning unity. Since the Jewish people were the first to attain unity above division, they received the mandate to act as a light unto the nations. This meant that their role was first to connect, and then to spread the light that emanated from their connection like rippling waves to the rest of humanity. Why is this role so important today? It is because in today's world, the overblown human ego, social division, conflicts, and hatred are all rising exponentially, causing a myriad of problems and crises, and thus there is a renewed urgency and necessity for the Jewish people to carry out their role. The more people suffer, the more they subconsciously blame the Jews for holding the keys to fix the problems, but failing to do so. If we Jews make no effort to connect, we block the positive unifying force from reaching humanity, and hatred pressures us to perform what is expected of us. Humanity's positive future depends on us. If we have a privilege, it is in our role to deliver human society the abundance and fulfillment that comes from uniting as one man with one heart. As is written by the most renowned Kabbalist of our generation, Rav Yehuda Ashlag, Baal HaSulam, it is the wisdom of faith, justice and peace which most nations learn from us, and this wisdom is ascribed to us, alone. When we as Jews unite, even slightly, we will act as a conduit for the force of unity to spread throughout human consciousness. Medium published my new article Repairing the World from the Pandemic. The planet is not going back to the old normal, warned the World Health Organization, WHO, as more than 14 million people have been infected with the coronavirus globally, with around one-third of those cases reported in the US. Also taking into account its severe economic impact, the WHO considers the pandemic to be the most severe global health emergency ever. COVID-19 has arrived to erase the old world and draw a new one, and we can look ahead to the new world with optimism and hope. The new reality demands that we undergo such a perceptual inversion, in which we will each stop calculating everything out of narrow self-interest, and instead develop a broad vision that takes everyone's best interests into account. More than a passing crisis, the health and economic devastation from the coronavirus represent the collapse of the world as we knew it. That old reality is crumbling before our eyes. World leaders find themselves powerless to manage the pandemic properly. They have their backs pressed against the wall and their pockets empty of ideas on how to solve the enormous coronavirus challenges, since their approaches are unaligned with the new reality. We thus need to realize that tomorrow will be unlike yesterday. Although nostalgia for the past is natural, we have no option but to start looking forward, and fast. New is good. The old world collapsed because its foundation needed an upgrade. Even if we found success in the old world, it says nothing about whether we will do so in the new reality. In order to survive and prosper in the new world, we need to transform the basis of our interactions, from egoistic to mutually considerate. The new reality demands that we undergo such a perceptual inversion, in which we will each stop calculating everything out of narrow self-interest, and instead develop a broad vision that takes everyone's best interests into account. The pace of human development has accelerated tremendously over the past few centuries. It has manifested in all sorts of revolutions and social changes. Currently, the call for solidarity and equality resounds in the streets of many countries. However, in the new world, even revolutions will be different. They will first and foremost take place inside the person, in people's minds and emotions, rather than on the streets. We will have to feel that all human beings are equal, close, connected in mutual consideration, and accordingly learn how to treat others as we would like to be treated. Previous revolutions changed the pecking order. Those who were unimportant became important, and those on top lost their status. The next revolution will be different. Its innovation will be the connection of everyone together as one. When we feel as one, social systems will emerge that mirror our new connection. Some of the new systems will be voluntarily built out of informed participation on our part. However, as much as we lag behind in our grasp of the developmental trend toward unity, nature will painstakingly force the construction of more unifying systems against our will. Thus, we will gradually bear witness to the dismantlement of the egoistic society, and its replacement with an altruistic society where all parts are equal and connected in mutual complementation. An inverted view to advance: how long will the change in question take? That is up to us. As of today, we are very far from the goal, both socially and personally. There is nothing more contrary to human nature than to think of the good of others as if it were our own good. And yet, our evolution requires such a change. Humanity now faces the challenge of matching nature's integrality and unity if it is to survive the 21st century. How will it be possible to reverse our selfish view? The method to reverse our nature can be explained with the following example. Under the current circumstances, we worry about contracting the coronavirus from others and decide to take measures to protect ourselves, such as wearing face masks and keeping our distance from others. An inverse perception, from inward care to outward concern, could be explained as following precisely those same measures as before, but with the intention to avoid our own involuntary transmission of the virus to others. It is no coincidence that it is currently impossible for us to get rid of the coronavirus, since doing so would require a level of mutual responsibility and guarantee that we do not have. This global pandemic might just turn out to be the first in a series of blows that will show us, with ever-increasing force, that in nature's view, we are all one, and our good future depends on taking care of each other as if we are members of the same family. Therefore, we should try to think about what it means to act positively to others, not only to those who are naturally close and dear, but just as much to those who seem foreign and distant. What we do for the sake of others comes back to us, because the system's every detail exists interdependently with everyone and everything in a single complete whole. When we function as a single body, we will experience the good life, nature's cohesive force will flow in our connections, and the world will become filled with abundance, health and tranquility, giving us all a new lease on life. Team Building Guide, Part 5. Principles of Forming a Team, Unification. Question: the fourth rule is the unification of the team. We are talking about creating any team, no matter in what sphere of human activity. The best way to interact with a friend is by example. You need to constantly encourage any actions aimed at bringing the team together. Here it is important to deliberately show your intentions and actions and not be modest. A person must show the other their respect, effort to listen, and understand, because this is how they set an example to others. How important is it to show that I am making an effort to listen to the other person? Answer: it is extremely important to show interest and deliberately demonstrate it. This is the responsibility of all members of the group, not just the person on duty. Question: even if it is hard for me to listen to someone? Answer: on the contrary, you listen to him, raise your hand, ask a question, and thus inspire the entire group with it. Question: what will give me strength and motivation? Answer: the fact that you have to do it. You were given the authority. From CAB TV's Management Skills, June 18, 2020. The Age of Enlightenment and Emancipation, Part 4. Hasidism, Touching the Spiritual Truths. Question. The Hasidic movement appeared in the third decade of the 18th century and was founded by the Baal Shem Tov. The approach of the Hasidic teachers allowed ordinary people to touch spiritual truths. If earlier only sages studied them, now ordinary people could do so as well. What was so special about the teachings of Baal Shem Tov that they captured the hearts of so many people to such an extent? Answer. The Baal Shem Tov followed the path of the Ari and explained in a simpler language, close to the people, how to act and connect with each other in order to achieve the revelation of the Creator. He set a very practical goal, to explain to any person who is in absolute ignorance about what kind of world he exists in, what states he passes through, why the Torah is needed, and why people exist. It turns out that the Baal Shem Tov gave ordinary people life. He explained to them how to live correctly and that behind every inner movement of a person in mind and feelings is a huge force that is correcting the world. Therefore, every person who treats the world like that is engaged in correcting it. From CapTV's systematic analysis of the development of the people of Israel, August 5, 2019. What is the wisdom of life? Question. How do you deal with egoism if it suddenly pops up in your life? Answer. It does so constantly, at every second. Egoism overcomes me at every minute and throws me into various thoughts. But this does not mean that I want to steal, deceive, or do something harmful to others. Egoism is what commands us, at every moment in the smallest of actions, for instance, in the way we sit, get up, and walk. It manifests itself in everything, in thoughts, feelings, intentions, words, and actions. The choice of one or the other, the way we speak, and our behavior is explored by egoism from within, and we must study it all and gradually correct ourselves. However, it is an interesting task. Question. Do I need to ask myself every time, why am I doing this? Answer, no. If you study Kabbalah, you will not ask yourself questions because you will be affected by the upper light, another energy that is not egoistic, but altruistic. Both lights influence you. They will guide you and lead you forward like how a rider controls a horse with two reins. Also, you will feel which of the forces currently leads you, with which and how you should progress, and how to balance them with each other. In principle, the whole wisdom of life is to balance both forces correctly. From CapTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 24, 2020. Between egoism and Creator. Question. When a person rises above egoism, does he see that there is no egoism? Answer. On the contrary, he sees egoism and how he rises above it. It is impossible without the ego, which does not disappear. We simply balance it with the good force of nature, the Creator. The Creator created the opposite force, egoism. In order to balance the ego, we need to reveal the Creator and attract Him. We will then exist between egoism and the Creator. We will begin to see from one end of the world to the other, everything will become absolutely clear to us. And everything will be fine, balanced, and perfect. From CapTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 10, 2020. Personality formation. Question. Are ideas about good and evil, truth and honesty, love and hate formed by society? Answer. These views are formed by the environment. But when they get into the soil, it all depends on what kind of soil the grains of the environment fell into. A lot of other data is taken into account here. These are the properties of parents and even grandfathers, the properties of the family and modern society, as well as all of their interactions. If I was born from certain parents and grew up in a certain environment, then it is necessary to take into account what kind of society I am raised in, Western, Eastern, religious, etc., That is, there are a huge number of factors of personality formation that I receive without even realizing it. But all this affects me. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 30, 2020.